Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
12 minutes past three here at CCR. Good buddy Steve Kearney joins us. Steve, we went from ice fishing season to the middle of summer. I mean, it's unbelievable. We're in the mid-90s and are going to be in the mid-90s through Tuesday the way it looks.
Hey, Steve, good afternoon. Yes, it's the continuation of our crazy spring, early summer, whatever the heck this is. And the good news, the fish are starting to really bite, and it's about time. I'm telling you, I was getting really worried, and I had a good week this week, finding a lot of big crappies up in boat docks, along boat marinas. A lot of these fish are moving in right now. They're spawning, they're building their nests, and you can actually see them with dark glasses. If you cruise the shallows, especially on sunny days like today, you can actually see them there. So I think that's going to continue. And finally got into the walleyes this week, and it's been a struggle for me from opening day on. It's been very, very difficult. But this week they started snapping in Wright County, Stearns County, and I'm very grateful for that because I wasn't sure it was even going to start the way things are going. So we're on the upward slide, and things should continue to get better and better. And, you know, as we're dealing with these heat issues, boy, it's an early morning thing for me. I'm on the water at 5:30, 5:15, and I get done with my people by 11 o'clock, and we're off for the day. And that's the big thing right now is very early in the morning, get your licks in and get off before it gets just too darn hot.
Yeah, and I would assume that this heat and some stability now in the weather is going to really help the walleye bite.
Yeah, you know, again, Steve, it's been a weird spring, and the walleyes this week have been biting at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I don't get it. They, you know, we're on these fish at 7 in the morning when you expect them to bite, and it's been totally opposite. So it's another goofy thing with this late ice out, and I don't understand it, even with sunny, calm days, they're biting. They start at 10 in the morning, and that's happened on multiple lakes. So I don't know what's going on, but at least they're biting sometime because it was really a tough first two, 3 weeks of the season. So it doesn't surprise me. The weeds are starting to come up now. A lot of the curly pondweed is coming up. Milfoil's kind of starting. And 3-4 days of these 90s, you know, that stuff's going to grow an inch or two a day. So I'm hoping it does cool off here eventually and retard some of the weed growth, but it's definitely kicking in. Water temperatures are almost 70 now, so we are progressing quite quickly.
Yeah, and Steve, I know you're always concerned about water quality in some of these lakes in southern Minnesota in particular, and when it gets real hot like this, water quality deteriorates pretty rapidly.
Yeah, it's true, and it kind of depends on what part of the state you're in. And, you know, a lot of times in the agricultural areas, a lot of that water quality really goes down quickly when you have heat like this and runoff from farm fields and whatever it may be. But, you know, this warm stretch I don't think is going to be significant enough to, you know, to create any type of algae issues yet. There could be some blooms here coming down the road, but if we cool off again in the 70s, things will kind of stabilize again. And, you know, as we've talked about, Steve, over the years, you don't want it to accelerate too hot, too fast, or too cold, too fast. Best fishing always throughout the whole year is when you have some sort of weather stability and you don't have any great highs and lows. So you kind of want to stay around average temperatures if you can, and that will prolong, you know, the good fishing. And these severe changes we have can really, really change things. So I'm a lot more optimistic now than I was 2 weeks ago, and actually getting my hands around a walleye again was very therapeutic because I suffered, man. I suffered.
Yeah, and Steve, let's talk about the bass. They love the warm water, and I would expect if this trend continues, we get a you know, big time warm week, and it looks like it's going to stay that way. That those water temps are going to take a dramatic jump, and the bass, they love that.
Well, you know, Steve, if it wasn't for the bass, my job would be very difficult, because if I had to fish walleyes 99% of the time, it wouldn't work. But, you know, bass are relatively easy to catch. Where, you know, our lakes, generally speaking, in Minnesota, have tremendous bass fishing throughout. That's the one blessing of all our fisheries, is we do have excellent bass fishing. But right now, they're very easy to find. They're in 6 to 8 feet of water right now on any lake that you're on. You look for those emerging weeds. Wherever you see green, oxygenated weeds starting to come up, like they are right now, those bass are right on the edge. And I'm catching smallmouth. I'm getting largemouth. Still hitting them on a jig and minnow, plastic worms. Anything that's kind of slow and methodical, they're hitting, but they're very easy to target right now. 6 to 8 feet, if you're in a very clear body of water, 12 to 14, but they will set up along that weed edge and they will stay there as long as there's cover. That means there'll be food there and oxygen, and they will be there for the duration unless something major happens.
All right, Steve, always great. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you from Gull Lake next week as Ron and I go up to the Team Challenge tournament and do our thing.
How about that? Look forward to it.
Oh, it's just fun to get in the boat with them. We're going to have a great time as always. And I did want to do a quick shout out to Thumper Pond Resort up in Otter Tail. I was up there last week. It's a wonderful place to kind of have a central location to hit all those lakes up in Otter Tail. So lots to do, Steve-O. Lots of stuff to do.
All right. Very good. Steve Carney, once again, things warming up and the bite getting better. Speaking of the heat, a heat advisory now in effect. From 1 tomorrow until 8 tomorrow. This has just been issued by the Weather Service here in the Twin Cities. Once again, they've issued a heat advisory in effect from 1 o'clock tomorrow until 8 tomorrow. Heat index value is climbing to between 95 and 100 within the Twin Cities area, so be aware of that, the combo of the heat and humidity. Right now, our dew point continues to drop, 93. Our dew point, though, 55, pretty comfortable. Winds out of the west at 12 miles an hour. And Sports Saturday continues in a moment. We'll get an update on the biggest day annually in motorsports, Monaco Grand Prix, Indy 500, and the Coca-Cola 600. Jordan Bianchi joins us in a moment here on the CCO. Thanks so much for joining us. A big weekend in motorsports. Monaco Grand Prix, of course, Formula One. And then you have the Indy cars on track, the Indianapolis 500. Looks like it'll be a hot one at the Brickyard. And then, of course, on to Charlotte in the Coca-Cola 600. And rain could be a problem there. Jordan Bianchi joins us, covers motorsports for SBNation.com. Jordan, it's been a while. How you been?
I'm doing well. Always a pleasure. And like you said, tomorrow is the biggest day in motorsports, and it's exciting if you're a fan.
Yeah, and if you want to define Formula One, I think Monaco does it. That is so cool.
It is. It is the biggest Formula One race around. It's glitz and glamour, so it's got that Formula One kind of appeal to it that you kind of associate with it, of course. But it's also kind of an old-school race in the sense that it's on this tiny circuit, so there's a lot of slamming and banging into each other. It's almost like a road course race in NASCAR, so to speak. So kind of a best of both worlds there, but it is an electric race.
Yeah, it is on my sports bucket list. Like I've never been to the Indianapolis 500. My brother has, but those are two motorsports events that I absolutely positively have to see.
Yeah, the Indianapolis 500 is almost indescribable. It's just electric. I mean, 300,000 people plus there, the playing of taps, you know, back home in Indiana again, all the pomp and circumstance in the pre-race. It's one of those most traditional things in sports, and doesn't maybe get the attention sometimes of the other things going on in the other stick and ball sports, but the Indy 500 is the biggest, most attended sporting event in the world every year, so you can't take that away, and it's incredible. Just even if you're not a motor racing fan, just everything associated with that kind of gives you goosebumps a little bit.
There is a little bit of controversy associated with the Indianapolis 500 and the fact that some of the regulars didn't get into the field, and that there's been talk of, hey, there's got to be a way for, even if we have more cars show up than are allowed into the field, and some people get knocked out, that the regulars should be in the field.
Yeah, I mean, James Hinchcliffe, who's the driver who is on the wrong side of the cut line this year. Indianapolis had 35 drivers show up for 33 spots, which is not something they've had in recent years. One of the traditions about Indianapolis has been bump day, and that hasn't been around the last few years. And bump day was restored this year because they had more entries than usual. And unfortunately, James Hinchcliffe, who is fifth in the championship standings, who is perennial, one of the most popular drivers in the series. He was on Dancing with the Stars. He was actually on the pole for this race 2 years ago, so he's really good here. He just had a bad day in qualifying and they couldn't figure it out, and he ended up missing the race. And the question is, you know, is that what, for the long-term growth of this series, because the IndyCar is more than just one race, is this a good thing? And there's kind of an ebb and flow. On the one hand, it's this tradition where you have the fastest 33 drivers. There are no safety nets. There are no provisionals like you see in other racing series like NASCAR, for example. You have to earn your way into this race, and if you can't do it, you can't do it. We've seen in the past Team Penske, who is the best there is in this kind of racing, failed many times to get in the cars. There is something to be said for that. Also, you also want your most popular drivers in this race to kind of help build your brand. So there's a little bit of push and pull there, and what's the best way to do this?
Yeah, and Jordan, speed is the key at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. These cars fly. It's unbelievable the speeds we're seeing.
It is. I mean, they're running 230 in practice and qualifying, and when they get strung out tomorrow, the speeds will go down a little bit, but they're still going to be running 220, and you're doing that in an open-wheel car where you're literally touching wheels sometimes. In a pack of cars, it is incredible what you see in some of the maneuvers because of that speed, the slingshotting, the passing, and some of the – we've seen it a couple times where drivers will almost get down in the grass and get their wheels in the grass to make passes. It is harrowing. And when you see what these guys are capable of, and gals too in this case, because we have Danica Patrick in the field tomorrow as well, it is incredible. And you really kind of appreciate the skill and just how much of an edge these drivers are.
Yeah, and being able to win the trophy and drink the milk, that is still a big deal.
Yeah, you don't think of milk as something you really want after a hot day, competing. Yeah. But that is what they drink when you pull into victory lane. And I know we're talking to Tony Kanata about this a couple of years ago, after he won. And he goes, "There is no greater feeling in the world when that milk hits your lips. It is the sweetest, most best feeling in the world." And he goes, "It's indescribable."
All right, you brought up Danica Patrick. She won an IndyCar race, I believe in Japan was her, her only win in the IndyCar, went to NASCAR, got a lot of publicity, was never able to get to victory lane. You could almost say her run in NASCAR in top-notch equipment was a bit disappointing.
Oh, absolutely. No question. I mean, she's with one of the top teams in Stewart Haas Racing in NASCAR. She just never had really consistent success. She had her moments occasionally where it looked like she had turned the corner and was going to kind of elevate herself, and she never did. And it was a disappointing run, and especially compared to what her teammates were doing and winning races and championships. Absolutely disappointing. But now she's back in IndyCar. You said she won in 2008 in a Japan race. She is really good in these cars. It's going to be interesting to see how well she can acclimate herself in traffic. She hasn't raced in a pack of cars in an Indy car since 2011. It's going to be a bit of an adjustment. But so far, she's looked really good. She's had the speed in practice and qualifying, and the expectation is she should be competitive tomorrow.
All right, who's the driver to beat tomorrow in the 500?
I would take any of the four Team Penske drivers, Joseph Newgardner, Simon Pagenaud, Helio Castroneves, who's going for his fourth win, and then Will Power, who is very good in these races as well. All those four of those drivers, I've shown the speed and the ability to run well, and Penske is always good in the Indy 500.
Looks like weather won't be a problem. As I mentioned, low 90s and sunny. It's going to be a hot one for those drivers. Wow.
It is, and it's got a really good chance of actually being the hottest Indy 500 on record, which is really going to test these drivers to their full capabilities. The track is going to be very challenging, very slick, not a lot of grip. And as you get more fatigue, like you see in other sports, mistakes start to happen. And this is going to be a very complex race tomorrow if the conditions are what we expect.
So Monaco early, Formula One, then the Indy cars in the 500, then the longest race of the year in NASCAR, weather permitting, the Coca-Cola 600. And the weather for the Charlotte area doesn't look good. They're having rain problems today. It looks like it could continue not only tomorrow, but even into Monday and Tuesday. They're going to have a problem getting this one in.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. The forecast has not been bad. I will say this, NASCAR has been hindered with some really bad forecasts this year a couple times, and somehow they've gotten the races in. But it doesn't look good. It does look like this is going to be delayed. And like you said, if you look at forecasts, that's not good either. It's going to be interesting to see when this actually does go off.
All right, let's talk about this sport a little bit. Right now, qualifying for the Coca-Cola 600, which starts in the day, ends at night, 600 miles. Kyle Busch, Joel Logano, Denny Hamlin, Eric Jones, Brad Keselowski. I think Eric Jones had pretty good times in practice. Mm-hmm. But there's been a lot of controversy about teams getting through inspection and some game playing with the cars and the rules package. What's going on there, Jordan?
Well, it's like anything in NASCAR. I mean, there's a set of rules, and the crew chiefs like to push that limit as much as they can, and they are towing that line up to in the limits and often going over. And NASCAR for many years was very lenient in a lot of these matters, and they just simply, you know, hey, correct these issues. But it got too big of a problem. Crew chiefs were taking advantage of the issue. So NASCAR has cracked down. They do not let any more tolerances when it comes to the chassis setups, when it comes to the height clearance of the car and everything. And they are really enforcing their rules to the letter of the law. And the teams are still trying to push the limits a little bit, and NASCAR's pushing back. So it's frustrating because you see a lot of big names. Kevin Harvick, for example, didn't even qualify this week. He'll be in the race, but he didn't qualify because he couldn't pass inspection. So it's frustrating because you see a lot of big names on a near weekly basis not get on the racetrack, and NASCAR's trying to figure out a way to put rules in place to punish these guys, but not so much, not heavy handed where it's really going to impact them long term. So it's a little bit of a push and pull. It is a bit of an issue though, because like you said, this is happening on a regular basis and it's getting a little bit old.
I have been to Charlotte Motor Speedway, and Hendrick Motorsports is right nearby. They don't have a ton of speed right now. I know we've brought this up before, but Jimmy Johnson looking for a sponsor. Lowe's goes away at the end of the season. And you look down qualifying. The fastest qualifying Hendrick Motorsports car is William Byron, 21st. Chase Elliott, 22nd. Jimmy Johnson, 23rd. Alex Bowman down in the 88 and 27th. What's going on with this once dominant team?
A lot of things. I mean, one, they're struggling with this new Chevrolet car that came out this year. Chevrolet introduced a new model, and it hasn't been as good as they wanted it to be. Frankly, it's been third out of the three manufacturers, Toyota and Ford, this year. They didn't expect that. They expected it to be a lot better. Secondly, Hendrick is still adjusting to the fact that NASCAR went to this new inspection model and changed how they tweak cars, how they look at cars, and the things that we talked about for, you know, passing inspection and everything, and they haven't adjusted to that. And three, other teams have simply gotten better. Joe Gibbs Racing, Furniture Row Racing, Stuart Haas Racing have all made significant gains over the last couple of years. Hendrick has been good at times, but they haven't been great, and they've just kind of been stuck in this lull. They've lost a lot of personnel behind the scenes. They've turned a lot of people over trying to figure this out. They've showed hints that they might be better, or they're on the road to back to being dominant again. But like you said, when you go through what they qualified yesterday, or they qualified for this race tomorrow, it doesn't look like that big turnaround is going to be anywhere near.
All right, finally, Jordan, the biggie. How's this sport doing right now? Is it holding its own? Combo platter TV ratings, track attendance, competitiveness. What's going on with NASCAR?
It's struggling. I mean, the television ratings continue to go down on a near-weekly basis. They're hitting record lows. Attendance is flat and down in a lot of cases. The costs to compete in this sport are still astronomically high, and they're trying to figure out a way to bring that in. Teams are struggling to figure out to adjust to this new climate where they don't have the same money coming in, but they still are spending a lot of money. It's a struggle. NASCAR's got a lot of things to be hopeful for. We've talked before, young drivers, the competition on the track has actually been really good this year, but they do have some issues, and they have a lot of major issues that need addressing. And because there are so many conflicting agendas in the sport, whether it's owners, our drivers, our teams, the sport or the tracks, everybody's got different things they think is important. It's hard to get everybody on the same page, and that's where NASCAR's at right now. They have to make big changes, but they're having a really hard time getting everybody to, you know, kind of get on board with what they need to do to get it better.
All right, Jordan, always great. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, there he is, Jordan Bianchi. He covers motorsports, SBNation.com, and he is based here in the Twin Cities. Good guy, does a nice job. Once again, Monaco Grand Prix early, Indy 500, and then the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Weather permitting, they're fighting rain in that part of the world for sure. 334, 93 degrees. Our dew point has dropped steadily through the day. We're at 55. We'll have a complete update on the weather in a moment. 3:40, 20 minutes now in front of 4 o'clock here at CCO. Twins and Mariners, game two of the three-game series tonight. Twins Magazine at 7:30, pregame 8:30, first pitch 9:10. Odorizzi against LeBlanc from Safeco. Seattle won it 2-1 in game one of the three-game series. There'll be a matinee on Sunday. And then the Twins continue the road trip. They will be in Kansas City to play the Royals Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before returning to Target Field to take on Cleveland beginning on Thursday. More on the Twins a little bit later on. Right now, we want to talk NBA. Jerry Zagota joins us, covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune. Jerry, I hope you're having a good summer so far.
I am. Getting ready here for the draft coming up next month. It was weird to go through and not care about the draft lottery for once. That was a very strange thing, but still got stuff coming up. We got the draft and the free agency, and we'll see what happens, where this team goes from here.
Yeah, and there's been a little bit of drama. Some of it manufactured online. There was a podcast. Some ESPN guys floated out there that Karl Anthony Towns isn't happy, to paraphrase. I suppose it's hard, really, at this point in time, to get anybody to talk frankly about who's happy and who's not.
Yeah, I mean, this is the time of year everybody lays low. You don't hear much, you know, there's not much access to Tibbs, certainly not like in the season when you talk. We talk to him three times a day, and I'm not exactly sure where Towns has been. I think he spends the summer all over the place, L.A. and different places. And I'm not saying that there isn't, tension. There probably was from the day they, acquired Jimmy Butler, and things got kind of upset a little bit with, Towns and Wiggins being the future of this franchise. But I don't, I can't tell you how many calls from sports talk radio is wanting to know where's Karl Anthony Towns getting traded to, and I don't even, want to go on him because I just, I think that's ridiculous. I'm not saying, never say never. Any guy can get traded, but I don't think they're certainly at the point where they're going to trade this guy. What they got to do is figure out who they can afford and, how they can pay all these guys, because with Towns now being third team All-NBA, I think he's going to make considerably more than Wiggins made last year on his max deal contract.
Yeah, and the numbers are staggering that have been thrown out, and what Towns is eligible. But you still have to feel, and when I saw that report and have read subsequent reports kind of based on that and what rumors are floating around, Karl Anthony Towns still has to be considered the cornerstone guy. I know Jimmy Butler came in and did a lot of good things, but, I mean, over the long haul, you would still think everything focuses around Karl Anthony Towns.
You would think so, unless, somehow Tibbs, and I don't know, he's been pretty forward-looking so far. He hasn't, especially his first year here, I was surprised that he didn't, was more impatient, unless, he can somehow see a way to, add guys who are around Butler's age and completely blow up this youth thing and not wait. The question is what they do with Wiggins now. They've already traded Zach LaVine away, but you'd think for certain that Towns would be part of it, unless they've got some other plan they could talk Glenn Taylor into. But he is the franchise. I mean, the guy who's going to be worth, he's going to get paid. I don't know if he's going to be worth, if anybody's worth it, but probably $180 million. So you just saw what he did last year, that 56 point game and the way he played, and to think he's 22 years old.
Yeah, the Andrew Wiggins thing is complicated, because hindsight is always 20/20 in this case. Why did they give him a max deal, and why did they lock in Andrew Wiggins? He's not that kind of player, and so on and so forth. It's easy to say that after the fact. He's still a young guy, and you can still say he's shown signs. Early in that playoff series with Houston, looked pretty good. By the end of the playoff series, there were some things that weren't so good about his game, but there's still upside there, and I can't imagine anyone willing to take on that contract anyway.
Well, you might be able to find somebody, that's good, a team that's building and has, a lot of cap room, and maybe, but I don't think you're going to find
established team for it. And, you know, people are already ready to write him off after last season. I think you got to look at the circumstance of it and think, you know, things, okay, why was he so, looked so promising the first 3 years and not so last year? And I think you could say because Jimmy Butler was here and he hasn't figured out where he fits next to him. And you bring a guy in with that kind of alpha personality and who the ball went through him every time, particularly in clutch situations when it had been going through Andrew before that. And I think he really just struggled how to figure it out. I mean, I don't think it's the fact this guy has really completely regressed and he can't play anymore and he's not worth, I don't know if, you know, you had to probably sign him to the max deal just to be able to keep him figuring. Someone maybe would do that, you know, a year later. But he's still just 22 or maybe just turned 23. But, you know, give him another year. See, you know, I guess there's a chance they could trade him, but see how he fits next to Butler. And, you know, if Jimmy doesn't resign, he's got one more year left. I mean, you know, if you get rid of Wiggins and all of a sudden you all you have left is Towns and Jimmy leaves, I think that the plan was, you know, you signed all these other guys on 1 to 2 year deals, Jamal Crawford and Gibson and Teague. And then if the experiment didn't work out and you couldn't re-sign Jimmy, then you still had Towns and Wiggins signed to max deals and you could build around them from there. And I still think that's probably the wise way to go. I don't think you bail yet.
Yeah, and even though we're not even into June yet, and as you pointed out, there's still a thing called the draft. There's still free agency. There's a long way to go before camp begins and the season begins in October. But it's not out of the question to think that the Wolves starting five is going to be the same this fall, that you're going to see Towns and Wiggins and Butler and Gibson and Teague on the floor to start the game opening night.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is, like, when the season ended and they had a press availability with Thibodeau and with Scott Layden, that Layden was talking about sort of the regret he had that he wasn't more active at the trade deadline. And we don't really know what that meant, but that there were some possibilities for them. And I don't know if that was small or large, but, you know, if you're going to try to keep Jimmy, and he's always said, he's already said, you know, I've already made enough money. Money's not going to dictate my decision now, whether you believe him or not. But you know, if you're gonna keep him and he wants to win, I don't think you sell him just by, you know, these guys improving. You got to make another move, and you know, how do you do that? I mean, I know people online, you know, would have loved, oh, trade Andrew Wiggins for Kawhi Leonard, but you got guys out there who are going to be available. It'll be interesting to see what the Spurs do with Leonard. It's interesting to see what the Clippers do with DeAndre Jordan. I mean, those are two kind of guys that fill, you know, what needs the Wolves need, a shot blocking rim protecting big man and a great perimeter defense. And I'd say they can get their hands on either one of them, but see if there's somebody out there that they can make the kind of move they made last year with Butler to, you know, really get themselves closer into the conversation. Cause right now, you know, no matter how the season ended up and who they played, they're still, you know, miles away from teams like Houston and Golden State.
Yeah, going into the game tonight in Oakland, Houston and Golden State, the Rockets will try to advance to the NBA Finals without Chris Paul. That's a big blow, hamstring issue.
Yeah, they've been through it before, though. They started the year without him, so or at least early in the year, and that is. But, you know, I still think when it comes down to it, I still think Golden State's going to figure out a way. They're just too good. They got Durant, but we'll see. It'd be a hell of a thing for the Rockets going without Chris Paul and finish him off. But I think it's going to come down to a game seven. I think it's going to come down to Durant with the ball in his hands. But, you know, you hope in these playoffs we get some games. Then we get series, you know, going to seven games. But none of the games have been great dramatics. You hope here coming down that, you know, you get a couple really good ones.
Yeah, and in the East, we've learned Kevin Love in the concussion protocol. He won't be available for that Game 7. It is LeBron James against Boston Celtics, who lost Gordon Hayward early. And then, of course, no Kyrie Irving. And still the Celtics have found a way. And here's LeBron James. Just it's extraordinary. It's been fun to watch. To see LeBron James in a living legend at the peak of his powers. I kind of hate the comparisons to Michael Jordan and other legends. Just enjoy what LeBron's doing.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And we'll see if he's got one more bit of magic in him. That would be, you know, the home team has dominated so much in that series. But if he could come in there and, he knows that stage. He loves that stage, and he's amazing. But the other thing that's been amazing, and this is how Jason Tatum, to me, has played for Boston. He was a rookie. He was coming the third pick. The trade they made with Philadelphia, they end up with him, and he's just, for a rookie to play the way he's played on that stage, has been incredible.
Yeah, and I think NBA coaches sometimes get too much credit or too much blame, but in this case, Brad Stevens has really turned out to be the real deal. Considering the players, I brought up Hayward early, they didn't have him for 81 games this year, and then Kyrie Irving, a big piece, not available as well. It's pretty impressive how the Celtics play and how they play together.
Yeah, especially given the history, you know, before that, of how college coaches fared in the
right.
NBA, which wasn't good. And he has come in, and he's been just, you know, so cool and calm and so good at what he's done. And I think the coaches had a vote themselves. They awarded their own. They've done it the last couple of years. Their own Coach of the Year, and a lot was made that Brad Stevens didn't get a single vote in that. Well, I think that's only because he only voted for one in that poll, whereas like when the media votes for Coach of the Year, I think they vote for three or five. So certainly, you know, the job he's done has been outstanding.
Yeah, and I still think they're going to find a way to get the finals to the end of June. I'm not sure how they're going to do that, but it is amazing how they stretch this out. Well, Jerry, it's always great. Enjoy your summer, and thanks again for the time.
You're welcome, Steve.
All right, there he is.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you as well. Jerry Zagota joining us. Covers the Timberwolves. Does an outstanding job for the Star Tribune. And, of course, startribune.com. 9 minutes now in front of 4 o'clock here at CCO. Sports Sunday continues. Lumpy in the mix in Fort Worth on the PGA Tour. We'll get into that in a moment. It is a sports Saturday here at CCO. Eric Nelson joins us following the news at 4. Andy Grater of the Pioneer Press covers the Loons. Loons home. They get Montreal at steamy TCF Bank Stadium tonight. Should be a fun night out there. 93 now, West Twins at 12, Dewpoint 55. And there is a heat advisory in effect tomorrow from 1 until 8 o'clock. Be aware of that. Record heat the way it looks tomorrow. And we could have record heat again on Memorial Day. Quick update on the PGA Tour there in Fort Worth at Colonial Country Club. I think the PGA Tour has been going to Colonial Country Club for a long, long time. It might be one of the longest tenured events on the PGA Tour. I know the PGA Tour goes to Riviera in L.A., Riviera Country Club. That's another one that's been at the same venue. But Colonial's got to be at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think...
right near the top.
I will try to look that up,
yeah.
But I believe, yeah, you're talking Riviera, you're talking Colonial.
Pebble Beach, probably.
Pebble Beach, is on there.
Torrey Pines, I would think, is another one in now, San Diego.
I would guess it is now. I think Greensboro, the Wyndham,
was probably
hosted a lot and hosted consecutively. I'll look that up real quick. I'll try to.
All right, Justin Rose, 15 under. Emiliano Grillo, 4 back. Brooks Koepka, the U.S. Open champ. And by the way, the U.S. Open coming up at Shinnecock Hills on Long Island. Brooks Koepka in third at 9 under. Tim Herron got it to 8 under. Minnesota's own Lumpy, and a couple of bogeys on the back nine. Finished 2 under on his round today. He's at 6 under and a tie for 15th. Now, Herron, 191 at the moment in the FedEx Cup standings. 125, hang on to their card. He is in the neighborhood of 48, so in a couple of years he'll be available for PGA Tour champions. He'll be able to play with the seniors. But then I got to thinking, you know, Heron's had a pretty good career. He's won out there and been around for a long time. How much money do you think Tim Herron has made in official PGA Tour money in his career? He's 77th all time. He is 77th all time on the PGA Tour money list. As of right now, $19,129,000-plus for Herron in his PGA Tour career in official money. Number one, Tiger at $111 million. Phil second at $87 million. Vijay Singh third at $70 million in career money. So there you go. They're playing at Colonial in Fort Worth as we get into June, the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. And always look forward to the U.S. Open. And once again, defending Open champ Brooks Koepka in pretty good shape right now, all alone in third place. We'll have all the news. We'll have all the weather at 4 here on a hot one at CCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.